It's time to get on the ice. Music City Gold is on the air with Kyle Hancock, Daniel Mangrum, and Matt Bain. We are Smashville's best fan-driven podcast, featuring news around the league, the Predators, and the occasional hot take or two. Powered by the Ingram Agency, you're listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Music City Gold. This is our last episode before the Christmas break. I'm Kyle. With me, as always, is Daniel and Matt.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
So, guys, we've got basically 1 week to Christmas. Do you have your shopping done?
It's been done, man. It's been done since Black Friday. Go out all night, and then it is done for the rest of the season. You can kick back and relax. Somehow, I don't think that's Matt's strategy.
But. Yeah, I don't know about going out all night on Black Friday. I prefer the online method and save myself some sanity. Yes.
So, do you have your shopping done, though?
No.
That's a no. Yeah. Big
Still
question.
Have a little bit left to do.
Have you bought your wife her stuff yet?
Well, you know, we are going to Switzerland in about a month, and we're actually going to be in Paris on her birthday. So that's pretty nice. But we're going to get another one or two little things.
Remember
but.
That budget I was telling you about?
Yeah, how's your budget looking on this?
Yeah, looking a little. Daniel's trying to make a point about a budget, and he's like, you know, it's going to be a little more expensive than what you think, and I'm trying my best to keep it under that budget, so I can't prove Daniel right.
But. I just have a feeling you're going to get over there, and that wallet's just going to loosen up a little bit, especially with some birthdays, and y'all are going to want to have fun and
have
go
nice
out.
Dinner,
yeah, nice dinner.
Like
so it's just a little different once you get over there, but it will be worth it. I guarantee it.
I will tell you, when I think about going overseas, I don't think about going to Paris. It just me does not sound like a fun place to go.
Well, not me either, but...
It's a very touristy place. A lot of people do want to go there, and I do want to visit myself, but we're only going to spend, I think, two days roughly there. We're going to hit all the highlights. We're going to hit the Eiffel Tower, you know, the Louvre, or the Louvre, as Matt was trying to pronounce the other night. Notre Dame. We're going to go to the Arch de Triomphe. I'm not going to try to pronounce that.
You're at least going to go see the Mona Lisa, right?
Yeah, that'll be at the Louvre. So I'm pretty excited about all that. But then we'll, you know, take our train and hightail it on to Switzerland, which is going to be gorgeous in the middle of the winter. So we're super excited. So
I am excited most. They have hot chocolate in Switzerland, and I'm excited for some French press coffee in France. And Kyle, you know something else I discovered the other day? I was making an espresso, give this a little try, plop you a dollop of ice cream in your espresso, you're welcome.
Yeah, but that's been a thing for a long time.
That has been a thing.
Have you ever done it?
No, but I know it exists.
Yeah, well, we were looking at a list of all the differences, like, well, here's the difference between a latte and a macchiato, and all this list was some weird name, and it had ice cream. I was like, whoa, I thought that was a thing, but I've never tried it. I must try this. It's incredible.
Dude, with like some Haagen-Dazs vanilla bean.
Oh, that's what I use, baby.
Vanilla bean?
Yeah.
Haagen-Dazs?
Yeah. Duh, that's the only way to go.
The closest I've come is putting some whipped cream in my coffee.
Oh, God. Oh,
it's called a campana.
Yes, but there's tons of other ways that we're going to have to experiment with this, but yes.
But lately, I've been experimenting with ice cream, and it's like, look, my wife looks at me ridiculous because here I am dumping ice cream in my breakfast coffee, but hey, whatever. You only live once.
Well, look, the coffee gets you going. Everybody needs their starter fluid, kind of like Daniel's espresso cups downstairs.
Man, that's been the best purchase I've made in a while, and I haven't even whipped out the really good beans yet. So super excited about that. Super excited about our trip coming up. Super excited about hockey, too.
Well, what I'm not excited about is the fact that the Preds decide to go up to the Senators, not take the game seriously, and in the first period, drop 3 goals.
Yeah, they're getting manhandled tonight. For some reason, Ottawa plays really well at home, and they have been this year. So this is going to be a tough stretch for us. We have 11 out of our next 14 games are on the road, by the way.
Yay,
so
Christmas winter break time.
We started really hot on the road. Here lately, we have not been. It is time to get back to where we started at the beginning of the year. But, you know, getting some of our key pieces back is going to be nice. PK did travel with the team.
So did Arvidsson.
And RV was doing line rushes this morning. So could be back sooner than we think. I'm thinking probably Thursday maybe for PK. And then who knows about RV? I'm actually surprised that he came with them. So that kind of means that he might play at some point.
Well, he's near the end of his expected 6 weeks out with a broken thumb. So
maybe towards the end, like against Boston or something. But it's nice to see him already coming back because, man, it is needed right now.
Definitely. But, you know, we were talking about coffee earlier, Matt. Do you know who's one player that seems to, like, just really love his espresso right now and is just breaking records all over the place?
Who's that?
Alexander Ovechkin.
Oh, no doubt.
He's getting better with age, baby.
He actually seems to be.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So get this. He's 33 years old. He now has an NHL career high of 14 points in consecutive games. He has a total of 23 points with 17 goals, 6 assists, which beats his personal previous best of 13 consecutive games with a point all the way back from January to February of 2007, where he had 8 goals and 12 assists. The man is on fire. I really think him winning the Stanley Cup unlocked some sort of evolution, some superpower inside of him.
So it reminds me of that stretch that Forsberg had where he scored, like, what was it, like 8 goals in a week. Yeah. And then people were like, oh my gosh, it's the, you know, second coming. Here's Forsberg just carrying our team, which he really did during that month. I cannot put into words how impressive this is at this point of the season. And we've now had a decent enough sample size to where it's not like, oh, it's an anomaly. I mean, he's played 32 games with 29 goals. By the way, that's 0.906 goals a game. Not points, Matt. That is 0.90 goals a game.
That's incredible. And no shocker, he also is the first star of the week with back-to-back hat tricks.
Yeah, and get this. If he averages that out, which is a stretch, I think he'll cool down a little bit. But if he did average that out, he would make 74 goals this year in a single season.
That's insane.
His career high, 65, by the way.
Yeah, that's a hefty pace to keep up with.
And sure. I looked this up today, actually. Do you know when the last time it has been since someone has scored 70 or more goals?
I have no idea.
It was when I was born. It has been 25 years.
That would be incredible if he can match that mark.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know if this is sustainable throughout the whole year. I mean, most certainly, it looks like he's going to hit 60.
Yeah.
I mean, 20.
It hadn't been broken 20, what did you say, 25 years for a reason.
There's a reason, yeah. and that's why it would be extremely impressive if he could do this. But
he also could have been the only player in history to have back-to-back-to-back hat tricks, but he didn't get one the other night. But that would have been an incredible stat as well. But
the joke was if he'd gotten back-to-back-to-back, you would call it Ovech trick.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, you're talking about his back-to-back hat tricks, and it was against your Red Wings and my bubble team Canes. So that makes him the 14th player in NHL history to have back-to-back hat tricks more than once, with 2 back-to-back hat tricks his previous season in the first 2 games.
Yeah, if you're just looking at the list right now, and let's say he scores another 30 this year, you know, puts him around 60, and then he scores a, you know, marginal average amount for him the next year, 30 to 40, you're talking about elite category that you're putting him in, because he's realistically going to end the year at 660 goals. And then on top of it, if he starts, you know, next year and does 35 to 40, he's cracking the top 10 all time by passing, like, Messier, Lemieux. I mean, it's crazy what he could be. The milestones next year are even more incredible than this year. That's what I wanted to point out.
Yeah. It's another tier he's starting to unlock. They're the best of the best.
And we were talking about this at work with Taylor, actually, fan of the show. He even said the same thing. He just loves playing hockey right now. So realistically, he's in great shape. He's getting better, ironically enough, with age. I don't see him stopping for at least another 5 years. I mean, realistically. He's
got that competitive. I think he can keep going.
He's got that drive now that he's won a cup, and it seems to have reignited his career.
Second wind in the tank, yeah.
Yeah, and I honestly think, just looking at the list, he could finish third all time on goals. It'll depend on his production and also the injury bug. We'll see how he can hold up in those latter years. But it will be very interesting to see where he could land on the list, because he could potentially get Brent Hull, Jager, and then the next one on the list, which is going to be very impressive to catch up to, will be Gordie Howe. But it is possible.
It's one of those things sometimes you don't quite appreciate. I'll say a personal story. I didn't really appreciate Teemu Selanne until he retired. And then once I started looking at stats and stuff, I was like, oh my God, this guy was amazing. One of the best of all time. Man, this guy's incredible. And then you start looking at situations like this. You're living in the era of a guy who's going to go down in history as one of the best of all time. And so you need to stop and smell the roses and appreciate some of these players like Ovechkin for how good and truly great they are right now before you just kind of let time go by and don't really realize it and keep up with it.
So if Ovi gets 30 more goals this year, it'll put him around 666. Let's say he plays five more years and averages only 30 a year. That puts him at 816 goals, passing Gordie Howe.
That would be incredible.
That would be an absolute record that I never thought almost anyone in the modern era would be able to eclipse.
Well, speaking of records, you know somebody who's not having a good record as of late is the Chicago Blackhawks. They are currently 1-8-1 in their last 10.
Yeah, they're doing pretty bad for a team that, you know, likes to brag about three cups in 6 years. You know, we all talked about the fact that once they cooled down, they were going to plummet, and they seem to have plummeted, and they're still falling when the end is not in sight.
Yeah, it was like getting the reunion tour back for the cup, but, you know, everyone in the band's 20 years older, but they still are rocking the same hairstyle. Didn't quite work out, you know? I'm just saying.
I mean, they're currently 30th in the league with 26 points. That's of tonight, which is Monday. And as Matt said earlier, they're 1-8-1 in their last 10. Kings are behind them with 25 points. And, you know, if their season just has like a dot on the exclamation point, it's Corey Crawford.
Oh, my goodness. This was terrible.
Gets injured in Sunday night's game against the Sharks. Evander Kane collides with Dylan Strome, who hits Crawford.
Did you see the video?
Yeah, too? It was nasty.
It's like violent, too. I was looking at the replay in slow motion, and the back of his head, right where it's almost kind of soft on the mask, yeah, where the straps are, he drills the post. And, I mean, you don't want to say it, but he has suffered with injuries and stuff like this before, with the vertigo, I mean, which they said was like repetitive concussions.
Yeah.
So, do you think this is the last we will see Crawford in net?
It actually gives me a scary comparison that we talked a little while back about Sidney Crosby and how he kind of was in and out, and we thought, well, this could be the end of his career with his concussions and stuff, and it's really starting to draw some similarities with Crawford. I don't think he's done, but I really think it's going to hamper his play in the future, and especially you might be a little gun-shy, a little nervous coming out of the gate. You might play a little less aggressive or so because you're scared of this and that kind of thing happening. I don't know. I just don't see this ending very well for him now.
Most importantly, I think this is going to cause him to sit down and actually think about what's most important, like his health, his family. Does he want to continue to play? I mean, he's had a great career. He really honestly has. And you never want to see a player go out on injury. I mean, even if it is a Blackhawk, you don't want to see that. So it'll be interesting to me what his decision is after all this, if he wants to come out and still compete or if he wants to come up and do kind of like a backup role, which I don't, for me, that would be kind of hard to swallow. Like,
yeah,
why, you know, like I was elite, I was a starting goaltender, now I'm going to be like a backup and still potentially like still getting out there and you might get injured again, just in a backup position. It'll be very interesting to see what he comes to over the next couple, you know, weeks, because I think he's going to be out a little while this time.
It's also going to be interesting not only what Crawford's going to do, but what the team as a whole is going to do. So I was on Cap Friendly earlier today and getting prepared for the show, and I noticed that Kane, Taves, Seabrook, Keith, Kunitz, and Ward all have non-movement contracts.
Oh.
And then Kruger and Crawford himself have a modified no-trade clause. That is six players that they can't move. Everybody knows that Seabrook's contract's an albatross, and they can't get rid of it. Injuries aside, Crawford, that the Blackhawks are going to become that perennial basement team for a couple more seasons.
I don't know. Ask the Red Wings.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, wow. Left field with that one.
Ouch.
Well, I think that's just going to move us on to some more depressing news for Flyers fans, is that, you know, you lost your GM 2 weeks ago. Now you lost your coach.
Clean house. Gritty. World domination.
Gritty for GM, baby.
I will not be surprised if Gritty is the NHL commissioner one day.
You know, he would probably be a fan favorite for the position.
So this is an interesting take. So Dave Isaac of the Courier Post, which is part of the USA Today network, I believe is the person that would get credit for breaking this story on Twitter last night. because, you know, they're on their road trip, and out of the middle of nowhere, he gives out this tweet that basically says, Haxtell's out. And the next thing you know, people are commenting. Now people are going, no, he's out. No, he's in. The Flyers even come back and say, oh, no, he's our coach. Well, then you get fast forward to today, Haxtell's not on the ice for practice. The assistant coaches are taking care of it. The other assistants are doing it. And then sure enough, Flyers made today. Good old GM Chuck Fletcher said, quote, after meeting this morning with Dave Haxtell and thoughtful consideration, I have decided to relieve him of his duties as head coach, end quote.
And Gritty rises to the top. I mean, at this point, though, everyone's thinking it. Who's the logical replacement right now that you can think for the Philly position? Go.
Well, hold on. Before we get to the logical replacement, let's look at who's available. Todd McClellan, Mike Yeo, Joe Quenneville.
No one is picking up Yeo. Yo mama's not picking up. Sorry.
But I know.
And John Stevens.
And John Stevens, yes. But we all know that the one person that everybody's wanting to get is Joel Quenneville. Do you think he'll do it?
I mean, to be honest, Philly's a great historic franchise. You're talking about a beloved fan base, too. Much similar to Chicago's situation, besides the bandwagon fans. But that said, I think it could be actually a good fit for him.
But what if he goes to Seattle? Because some people are saying that he's just going to sit and wait. He's getting paid $6 million a year to sit around and do nothing.
That would be pretty fantastic if I could get paid $6 million. But at the same time, do you think that Coach Q doesn't want to compete? Let's be honest. He did win 3 titles.
Take the look Mike Babcock did. He went from Toronto, who at the time was not very good at all, and now Toronto's incredible. He is such an elite coach. Quenneville, Mike, could rise up in Philly and help them rebuild something. And like you said, he's got the cups. He might as well take on a new challenge. I don't know.
I mean, Hitchcock is kind of interesting. I feel like he kind of jumps into a team, gets them reignited for the first couple seasons. They're good, 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 good. And then like seasons 4, 5, 6, no, not good. Goodbye. And then he'll sit in the sidelines for a bit, retire, in quotes, and then comes back out and does the same thing. Where I think Coach Q's more of like a stay at home, like I'm going to really take this franchise on my back kind of guy, kind of like you were saying. I could see him wanting to do that as kind of like a starter project.
Well, I think it's important to mention here that Scott Gordon has been named as the interim coach there in Philly. And Chuck Fletcher says that he expects Gordon to remain the coach for the remainder of the year. So any kind of plan they have for getting another coach in isn't quite what they're looking at this moment. And he went so far as to say, according to Frank Saravalli, who broke this, he said that he hasn't asked permission to speak with Coach Q yet. Chuck Fletcher hasn't. So he hasn't even talked to him yet. He's got plans to keep this new guy, Scott Gordon, as interim for the rest of the year. So it might be something that we'll just kind of have to wait out and see within time.
Well, you know where to find Coach Q. He's at the Bears game still, you know, banging down the shots.
That was a pretty epic photo.
He's obviously not worried about finding a spot.
Speaking of shots, did you see this video of Tommy Hawk getting in a fight with a fan in the stadium the other day?
Do you know why he got in a fight?
I do not.
This is hilarious. You wait for it.
The fan was drunk and tried to take his head off.
Oh.
So he chokes like body slam.
Oh yeah, he did great. MMA.
Ultimate Predator would love those moves.
Yeah, I mean that's like cardinal rule number one. You have to suspend disbelief of the mascots.
Was that a bird joke? Cardinal rule.
Well,
didn't even plan to do that.
But
wow, I mean, I'm certainly impressed with my joke. My first thought was
it's not impressive because you didn't even realize it. So continue.
Well, my first thought was look behind your drum set sitting behind you there.
I know. I needed to do a ba-da-tsh.
I will say, though, one last thing about Philadelphia is that Saravalli also, his opinion said that, say what you want about Haxtell's tenure in Philly, but he deserved better from the Flyers and the way this was handled. And I'm not, you know, much of an insider. We don't really keep tabs on Philly very much, and we don't have privy to some of that knowledge in the front office, but according to Frank Saravalli, he didn't really quite go out the way, didn't go down the way it should have, and he deserved more respect from that. So that was an interesting thing to see, especially for some people like us who aren't privy to exactly how all that went down. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely could have been handled better, you know, because social media is a terrible way to find out you've basically been fired.
You wake up scrolling through your Twitter feed, I'm fired? Well, sometimes that's how it works in the modern world.
Well, guys, I think it's time to get to our guests. Joining us by phone is diehard hockey fan and NHL video extraordinaire, Jillian Fisher. Jillian, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. You know, just trying to give ourselves something to think about with the Preds doing terrible against Ottawa tonight.
Oh, it's so bad
it's
right
not
now.
Happening. It's not happening. Just look away.
Yeah, you know, when you know, your first period is you're down 3-0, you just know it's not going to be your night no matter what you do.
Yeah, and that's, luckily it's a long season, but those games that don't hurt any less when it happens like that.
Usually when we have people on the show, the very first question we're going to ask them is how they got into hockey. With the popularity you've had come in recently with the videos, how did you get into hockey?
So I think I just grew up around it. I just remember as a little girl, I would go to the rink and my brothers would play, and I always just was surrounded by it more or less, which I think is not, for where I grew up, is not entirely normal. Like, I didn't grow up in Canada or like deep in the Northeast. I grew up in Philly, which is still a good hockey market. It's what people think of, like traditional kind of. But I just always grew up around it, and I was always playing roller hockey. My parents joked they wouldn't get me hockey gear because I was always bouncing around from the next idea to the other. And they're like, we're not investing in hockey gear for you because you're going to be bored and we're going to drop a couple of grand on equipment. So I just kind of always grew up around it. My mom was a diehard fan. I just always remember like watching the playoffs with her as a little girl, and she would stay up every overtime, like in the playoffs, you know how they'll go sometimes to like multiple overtimes, and she didn't care who it was, she wanted to stay up and watch it because she just loved it. And it just kind of was always a part of my life in many ways, so I just developed a passion from that.
Well, what team would you actually consider your home team?
So I'm a Philly girl, so Philly, the Flyers, nice. Are my home team. But I am a cultural anthropologist, and for the first chunk of how I got into what I'm doing now in a weird way was I studied sport and culture, and I did a lot of qualitative research for different brands and startups and captured data for them. And doing that, like, on the ground and making these connections around the U.S. and around the world, it's tough for me because when you get to know people and you get to know their passion and you get to feel their passion firsthand, you have a rooting interest in it. Like, one of the first teams I really got to like do all that work with was the New York Islanders when they first moved to Barclays. And it was just like, I suddenly started really caring about the Islanders. And as I would travel around and I just meet all these people, it's everybody, when you get to meet them and you get to know them, fandom in itself is beautiful. It's exciting. It's so fun. And when you get to meet the people and you get to really experience it firsthand, like as a local, as a fan, and you let your bias aside, which is what I would do, I started having vested interest in all of these teams. But Philly is my team, but I can respect the fandom across the board.
So, Jillian, you mentioned Philadelphia. So what do you think about the worldwide phenomenon that is Gritty right now?
I was so worried you were going to ask about Hacksaw.
That's later in our episode, by the way. We're going to talk about that.
Well, I see a lot of jokes about how Gritty's plan all along was to take over all of the Flyers organization, which is hilarious because he just has this quality about it. I want to point out that I was always Team Gritty. From the moment they announced him, people were asking me, and I didn't have a full opinion on him yet. My first response was to make a comment about the other weird Philadelphia mascot, which is the Fanatic. And I think I understood where they were going with it. Gritty, he's just weird and obnoxious and in your face. And they knew exactly what they were doing. It's brilliant in marketing, and I love him. I'm a sucker for it.
So, Jillian, what is your favorite NHL rink to watch? I know you've probably been, you know, able to travel a whole lot to many arenas. We've got to go to a few. I know Kyle's actually got down to Tampa Bay and also to Washington. So what has to be one of your favorite arenas to visit?
Oh, that's such a loaded question. I mean, and this is not just me catering to, I know you guys are in Nashville. I absolutely adore Bridgestone. There's just something special about that whole atmosphere that's down there. And I just have such great memories, not just from like visiting in the playoffs. I mean, I went there, it was a bitter cold, was it December? And I was just remember thinking like Nashville shouldn't be this cold in December. And I still had a blast. The atmosphere was still amazing there. And I always say it's like Southern hospitality meets hockey, and it's this really fun mix of things. And that said, though, there's lots of really great places to visit. Every experience is unique and different depending on where you go. Tampa is another great market. I love Tampa. I've been down there a couple of times. I really enjoyed Vegas. I think you can, I always say you can have a good experience or you can have a bad experience. It's really up to you. And I always try to find the best in every place. Nashville is very special, though. I have always had a very, very entertaining, exciting experience there. And the fans there are just, those are so Southern. I love it. I just, the hospitality down there and just being right on Broadway and all the excitement that's right outside, the energy that's there is just intoxicating. It really is.
So we've been on a little bit of a food kick here on the podcast. So what would you say is your favorite arena food or has been your favorite food so far in your arena tour?
Okay, so this one's weird. I went to a soccer match in Japan. And wow. I lived in Spain for a while, and one of my roommates was from Tokyo, so I was visiting her. And so I was able to figure out what the heck I was eating there. And I forget the name of it, but it was essentially a fried piece of dough with octopus in it. And I just will always remember that because I was like, this is going to be nasty. And I was like, oh, this actually is pretty delicious. So fried octopus ball in, it's actually Nissan Stadium in Tokyo, it's right outside of Yokohama in Japan.
That sounds like that might be the Titan summer home.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And let's be honest, everything tastes better fried.
Yeah, but octopus?
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Well, you mentioned Gritty earlier and how exciting he is to watch. One of the other most exciting things to watch is actually your videos, which probably is what everybody knows you from. So a little bit of backstory in that. What is it that led you to making those?
So when I originally started out the career that I have, I was really focused on like the anthropological side of sports and fandom and just how fandom really shapes local culture and all this kind of boring and dull stuff. And when I would meet all these people, there was just this sense of like fandom wasn't as fun as it could be, or that the sports media wasn't truly capturing the fan experience. And I follow people like John Trist and Juggling the Jenkins blog, and they just take mundane things that you always hear about and they make it hilarious. They make it funny by just poking fun at the boring and the normal. And I wanted to be something fun and exciting. I always used to joke that hockey could use a little bit more personality, which is funny because this season they've really kind of steered into that, which is great to see. But I've always said, you know, be a part of the solution, not the problem. So I was like, I'm going to make fun content. I want to do something. And for me, it also allowed me to feel connected to sports, because when you're trying to talk about every team and you really want to know and be able to speak to every fan base, you really have to know what's going on. So it allowed me to really feel connected to it all. So, you know, there was a selfish part in there wanting to feel connected to the entire league. But I wanted to have some fun and poke fun at some of the crazy things that we fans go through when we talk about, and really just, you know, the whole part of it is to make fans remind fans what we love about the sport that we go crazy for.
Yeah, I have to say it is quite awesome to watch. It is, I love ribbing each other and making fun of each other and fan bases. And it is quite fast at how you do these cutscenes to these other teams. And for the casual fan, you actually learn a pretty good deal about that fan base who, you know, most hockey people are local. They only follow the local team. But you take, you know, a pretty good subsection across the whole league and just kind of jab at one another. And you actually learn a thing or two. It's pretty fun.
It's tough, though, because, like, there's definitely things. Like, I remember one of the first ones I did for hockey. It was right after the Tom Wilson contract. And the fan base was like so mixed about the contract in general. So there's a lot of stuff where it's like, I'm going to say this and like 50% of the people are going to vehemently disagree with me. So you just have to know that you're going to get people, you're going to get internet people who are going to disagree with you just because they can, you know. So that has been a little bit challenging for me.
I will say, when I was going through your videos earlier today, just to get an idea of how many you've done, I think one of my favorite ones was the one you made about every NHL fan this offseason. And yeah. I was at work, you know, middle of working, took a break on Twitter real quick, watched your video, and I laughed out loud so much when I got to the part of Ottawa where you were just crying.
that was probably the most negative I had gone ever in making any type of content, and I was like super nervous about it. And a lot of the Ottawa fans were like joking, like, this is exactly what it was like for us this offseason. I was like, that's perfect. Like, I didn't want to make fun of you guys, but also I didn't know how to not be true to what's really happening there.
So, Jillian, so far, what would you say has to be your personal favorite video? And also, how much have you spent on shirts and gear for every single NHL team? Because yeah. I'm sure a lot of people are kind of curious of this.
Yeah, so the first thing that this shirt, so I've collected them. I started collecting them probably 5 or 6 years ago. One of the first ones I bought, I was up in Montreal for a Flyers-Canadiens game, and I don't know like what caused me to be like, I want to buy a Canadiens shirt, but I just, like, this was my memento from that trip. And then anywhere I would go, I made sure I would just pick up a shirt. And then like 3 years ago is when I really started picking up the traveling, you know, going to like local places to gather footage and like collect data and do research and stuff like that. And everywhere I would go, I would just pick up a shirt. A couple of times I was in preparation, I would buy a shirt. So I was supposed to do a West Coast trip that completely fell through, but I ended up purchasing like all of the California shirts off Amazon for like, you know, $5-$10. Just to, when I was preparing to go out over there 2 years ago, and that fell through. So I was like, I had those shirts. But the majority of them I have from like a trip that I have gone to, like my Atlanta Thrashers one, I lived in Atlanta. So I have that from when I lived in Atlanta. So over the years, I'm sure it's probably been expensive, but like I don't feel it because it's been over, you know, the course of five or six years. So that's why everyone jokes about it. I'm like, I don't know. The budget was probably like, what was the cost of my materials to make the banners? You know, it's not very much money. That was where the money was spent. but the favorite video probably has been for me. It's like a toss-up. I love the Seattle one I just did because that was so different for me to kind of do like a dialogue between the teams. But I really liked the banners one. I thought that was really I personally didn't see anything wrong with the banner in Nashville, but it was just such a hot topic, and I really liked making a parody of the whole situation. And it was just it was a silly little thing. I enjoyed being creative and having fun like that, and just seeing people react to it was a lot of fun for me as well.
You know, speaking of the banner video, did you expect it to go as viral as it did?
No, never. I never know how people are going to respond to the videos. You know, I've definitely made a couple here and there where I'm like, oh boy, this could go viral, and then it goes nowhere. So I don't really know what makes a video take or not. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I have a general idea. Like, I know the formula that you need to kind of put together, but some videos just resonate more with people. Like the banner video, people just, again, it really took off in a way that I have never seen or experienced before. It was a little overwhelming for me just because you put something out there. I'm just being goofy, being silly, having fun on my own. Like that's why I do it. I have fun and I enjoy making them, because if I didn't, I couldn't handle, you know, the crap that also comes with it. So you just never know what you're going to get. And it was really fun to see it go that way. But even if it didn't, I would have been just as happy with the results.
It's funny because other teams have actually done banners similar to what the Preds have done. But I do think that now in the modern social media age, it just got out so quick. Mm-hmm. And it just was like everyone was ablaze on Twitter about it instantly.
It's so weird to me how the internet works and just how what I always say is like things can get twisted so easily too. Like it became this thing that was an issue somehow. And I was like, they're just raising a banner. Like everyone chill. But it was like everywhere on Twitter. Like you said, within a matter of like what felt like minutes. So that's I guess that's the beauty of the internet sometimes, but it's also one of the drawbacks of it.
Hey, we even made fun of ourselves. I think we photoshopped best hot chicken and what was
yeah.
it? Best bachelorette party capital or something. Yeah. So, I mean,
that's actually where the idea came from the video. I saw that tweet from the Predators, and I was like, they're on to something here, because like, they were making fun of raising a banner by saying like funny, silly things that really aren't super worthy of celebrating, kind of. Like, hot chicken, maybe you can celebrate, but like, I just saw that really. And I was like, I think this is a great video idea. We're doing it.
Now, when you
so
came,
that was where the idea came from.
Now, when you came down to Nashville for the playoffs a couple of years ago, did you see any of our world famous bachelorette parties?
I don't think I did, which is wild, but like, I know that they happen all the time, because I was with Justin and Glenn, and I just was like, guys, you keep talking to me about all these, like, the pedal taverns, and
the
I have
Woo
yet
girls.
To see a pedal tavern. Is that what they're called?
The yeah. Woo girls, too. Yeah.
The Woo girls on the pedal taverns.
I haven't seen them. I didn't even see, like, a bachelorette, like, the girls that wear, you know, bride-to-be, like, one of the sashes. I saw none of that. And you know what? That's actually kind of shocking, because there's lots of things about Nashville and how it's, like, the bachelorette capital of the world. And I'm a little disappointed. Well, I'll be back in February, so hopefully I will not be disappointed.
So, Jillian, out of all the teams and all the players that you get to see, you know, throughout all your travels, who are your players that you have to watch? They're on your watch list, night in, night out. Some of your favorites, maybe for your home team and also some other teams.
Am I allowed to say Barclay of the St. Louis Blues, the little puppy? He's on my watch list.
He's definitely on everyone's watch list.
He is adorable.
Well, you got Bark Andre Fleury, too.
Yeah.
I got that one.
Honestly, any of the puppies I'll watch. But in all seriousness, I mean, one, I feel like I'm not doing justice to being a hockey fan if I don't say Ovechkin. He's just always up to something. I just love how excited he is even to this day. You know, he's already won a cup now, and, you know, he could just be happy with that. But I just always find him so exciting and entertaining to watch. I also love Phil Kessel. Even as a Flyers fan, I adore Phil Kessel. I'm always checking to see what he's up to. And the young guns, all of these young players throughout the league, you know, I'm so excited for the hockey. Like, it's just, it's a different game than it was 10 years ago. And to me, that's so fun. I always like change. I think change is scary, but good. And I think in this case, the players that are the hot shots of the league right now are just engaging. Fast. They score lots of goals. I can't get enough of them, honestly.
So, Jillian, without putting you too much on the spot here, are there any upcoming videos that we can look out for?
So I'm making a Winter Classic video. I think I might do two, because I have two ideas, so we'll see what happens. Sometimes I make a video and I start editing it and I'm like, this is trash. So that happened. I was making one about the Uber situation in Ottawa, and I filmed it and I was like, this is horrible. We're going to nix this idea. So I have that one in the works. Like, I'm actually starting to work on that one. And I'm doing stuff in Nashville with Justin and probably the Mighty Drunks, one of the rec or beer league teams there. So we have a couple ideas that we're working through, but that's in February. So in between, there is definitely some other things that will be popping up, but that's the most exciting for right now for me. I'm really excited to come down to Nashville and film with some people down there.
Well, Jillian, that all sounds awesome. When you come down in February, you know, be sure you say hey to us, because, you know, we'll definitely be coming to some of the games.
Absolutely. I'll let you guys know when the dates are official. I will absolutely let you know.
So before we let you go, where can people find you on Twitter?
It's at Fisher Jillian, and it's at Fisher Jillian all across the platform. Some of them are Jillian Fisher, but if you search Fisher Jillian, they all come up.
Awesome. Well, once again, Jillian, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to another video.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
And once again, that's Jillian Fisher. So guys, I think it's time to get to some bread news now.
Sure is. We've kind of gone through a little rough stretch here, and I cannot wait for all these injured players to come back, let me tell you.
Rough is an understatement. So, not counting tonight's game with the Senators, Winnipeg currently is first in the league, first in the Central with 46 points. Nashville has dropped to second with 45 points. Colorado has dropped to third with 42, which, not toot my own horn, that is my top three of my preseason predictions for those three teams.
Matt's shaking his head.
So,
what was your preseason predictions, Matt?
I don't remember, but I'm sure they were great.
Oh, sure. You say that every week.
Minnesota is fourth with 36 points. Dallas is being Dallas with 35 points. St. Louis has continued their free fall with Chicago in 6th and 7th place with 28 and 26 points, respectively.
That is mind-boggling. 28 and 26 points for the Blues and Chicago.
But overall, we're 4th in the league. We're 3rd in the Western Conference, and like I said, 2nd in our division. You know, a little bit of a rough stretch. You know, we're 6-4 in our last 10. Could have been better. You know, we had a terrible road trip, though.
Yeah, the Western Canada trip was terrible. And I would like to point out, we're 4th in the league, but 2nd in the division, which just speaks to how crazy the Central is right now. But on top of it, it took teams this long to catch up to us with this many key injuries and people being out that long. I mean, Turris was out a month. PK's been out like a month and a half. RV and Forsberg over a month each, a month and a half. And that was crazy. And credit to Matt, he actually said this at the early onset of the season. The hotter the start you can get now and rack up those points at the beginning of the year, the better your seeding is towards the end because you get a little bit of a cushion. And look, we had a cushion, and it took teams to game 32. The Winnipeg Jets, which we thought were going to be first or second in the division, it took them to game 32 and 33 to catch up with us with a month and a half of $29 million basically being out of our salary cap. So if you would have told me that would happen, I'll take it.
Well, we'll say also in addition to the hot start, even though Rene has not had the best night tonight against the Senators, he actually leads the entire league in goals against with, and of course this number is going to be adjusted for tonight's game, currently it's 1.96 goals against, which is first in the league. And what I do like the fact is that the Preds are first in goals against with only 81.
Yeah, MoneyPuck.com actually did an updated list of the best goalies, and once again, Pekka is on top with most of the categories. I mean, one of the best in the save percentage on unblocked shots, saves above percentage, also the rebounds per save. He's basically doing everything in all the key categories that you want to see, and he's just getting older. Doesn't make any sense.
Do you think he's a contender for the Vezina again this year?
He definitely is at this point, but it's a long season. We'll see towards the end. I honestly think right now, just looking at it, it looks like to be Peck and probably Fleury, but that'll really be dependent on how the Knights do in the stretch because Fleury was like star of the month, I think, last month where he had like two or three shutouts in a row and went on a hot streak, and then since then he's kind of cooled off. So goalies are really streaky like that where Peck's more of a steady, you know, goaltender as we've mentioned before. So it'll be interesting to see where everything evens out towards the end, but I honestly think it'll probably be Peck, maybe Vasilevskiy, and probably Fleury again this year.
So, Matt, what did you think about Tolvanen when he was up here?
You know, pretty good. I'm glad he got on the scoreboard finally. We've been all waiting for that for forever, so I wish he didn't have to go down so quick, but I was glad to see him, and I was pretty pleased with his play so far.
I mean, the biggest thing for me was I felt like defensively he looked better. He was a little stronger on the puck. He was not struggling to be, you know, out of position. He looked to be in the right spots. He still is a little weak, you know, on the boards and such, which I think is going to get better with time. He's 19. Like, you have to put that in perspective. Like, he's a 19-year-old. It's almost crazy.
Yes.
That he's playing against full-grown men and still being able to compete, but I honestly think give him about a year of bulking up too and more time on the ice too. He's getting in our routine. I mean, even Lavi said he looked much better and more comfortable. And the more reps he gets in Milwaukee too, you have to admit, you weren't a fan. Look, he's rolling his eyes. He wasn't a fan, but you have to admit he looked more comfortable on the ice.
I will have to say going to Milwaukee has helped him. And I looked at this more as like a progress report. Let's see where the progress is, if you've done anything, and certainly he has grown a little bit. So this isn't the end result. He hasn't quite fit in all the way yet, but you have seen progression and progress from last time. So that is good to know that the system in Milwaukee is teaching him and he's learning it. Yeah, he's still young and all that. So it's things are still looking up here.
Let's talk about that backhand too.
It's a nasty backhand goal.
That goal was sick.
And it couldn't come against a better team than the Blackhawks earlier in this month.
Yeah, that was a great game to be at, but you know, Keith kind of went off the deep end as we talked about last episode.
So on the sheet here I've got the games we played. So December 13th and December 15th, we played Vancouver and the Devils. Do you know what line stood out the most those two games?
Which line?
The fourth line.
Yeah, they've been actually doing a lot of work here recently.
And I am happy for that because I love watching Grimaldi. As a short guy myself at 5'4",
wow.
To see a guy that is 5'6", laying hits on people like it's nobody's business.
We got to get a box for Kyle to step up to the table.
I mean, he almost knocked that Devils guy into the bench the other night. Just straight up laid him out.
I mean, no pun intended, but that line is very salty. I mean, you got Salty on it. You got Rocco. It's a very gritty line. Yes. And they've been doing a lot of work. And also, Freddie's looked pretty good, too. He's been very fast, going to the right spots on the puck, too. He got a nice goal last game. So I've been very impressed with the fourth line production, which we've needed, by the way, just to tread water till our superstars can come back.
So going back to the stretch of six games, what do you think's the worst game we've played so far?
I am going to have to go with the Canucks, because once again we come out lackluster against a bottom dwelling team, which is not a shock for Preds fans.
You know, we talk about this every time we record. We seem to have one game against a lower ranked team that we just crap the bed in. I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, you know, yeah, we showed some life in the third, but it wasn't enough. But I will say, I'm going to count Tim Peel as part of the reason we lost. Because nobody likes
Tim
Peel.
Don't do all that. I mean, I don't like Tim Peel, but this game, we just came out flat. I mean, there's no way around it.
Flat was an understatement. I mean, we only got 9 shots in the first, 7 in the second. Meanwhile, Vancouver's over here posting up 14 shots in the first and 11 in the second. They just totally outworked us all over the place. And then you got Watson taking a penalty. Yarnkrog and Ekholm gets 2.
Yeah, you know, Vancouver connected on the power play. And their power play unit is the third best in the NHL right now. But it is interesting, like you said, that they've actually only won. That's their second win in 14 games. So they got some young talent. They got 2 or 3 great players on the young. But
well, they came out of the gate really hot too, and then all of a sudden it was like a nosedive after that, you know, incredible start, and people were like, "Oh, look at the Canucks, and you know they got this awesome rookie, and who's he? And he's just lighting it up." Well, they've shown that they're a good team. They just haven't been performing as of late, and the Preds ran into an angry team. They looked angry on the ice. I mean, it was on man rushes. We were giving up way too many. I mean, Peck even saved like 2 or 3 that should have gone, like totally should have gone in.
And you kind of put it on a platter. Pedersen gets a penalty shot, and he's that hot rookie we're trying to not give the puck to.
Yeah, of course. We take a penalty against him. So it was a very undisciplined game in my mind.
So what do you think our best game was?
Maybe the Ottawa game. Not tonight's one, but the one a couple days ago.
Well, newsflash, the Predators have just tied up the Ottawa game.
What?
They have come storming back.
Don't call it a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback yet. I mean, I have to hold my excitement in, but it is now 3-3 in the third period with 9 minutes left.
That kind of makes me think about what I said when I was driving over here to record. I was communicating with somebody on Twitter back and forth about our terrible start, and I said, you're just going to have to pray that they have a good third period comeback, and sure enough.
Here we are.
You know, Daniel and I were at that Senators game, and that first goal that Rene 26 seconds in, such a soft goal. But you know what I liked about is at the very end of that game, Rene basically said, yeah, that was a terrible goal.
He was like, did you see that goal? I mean, it was really bad. Like, he's so honest about it that
I like that.
It's refreshing.
He can be real.
Yeah, know. I mean, that's about as real as you can get as a player. He's like, did you see that? I mean, that was pretty terrible. I'm not proud of that one. But here's the deal. If you're a goalie in the NHL, or if you're playing at any professional level, I'm sure there's going to be one time that you do something stupid over the entire length of your career. Do you think Ronaldo or Messi has done something stupid where they've messed up? Yes, they're going to mess up. But it's just nice to see someone claim it. Granted, that did not help me 26 seconds into the game because I did not get the interview at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, when that happened, everyone kind of was just like, oh, it's going to be that type of game.
Yeah, flashback to the Jets game.
But you know, Daniel, they did end up turning the game around. They got a 3-1 win. So, you know, you can put your worries aside and instead worry about tonight's game.
Yeah, you know, after that first period goal, we looked dominant basically the rest of the game. Probably the second half of the first, we really came out strong in the second. We actually outshot them 36-26. And then on top of it, our faceoff percentage was a stellar 61.4% for the night. Very impressive. Very happy with that number. Still 0-for-2 on the power play.
Oh, and something else interesting is that the Preds have been great on the PK. We took 3 penalties, but they didn't capitalize on any of them. And Michael Gallagher pointed this out, actually, that before Austin Watson had returned, the Preds were 22nd in the league on the PK. But since his return, we are 4th in the league.
Yeah, and not including tonight's game, but we're actually up to 82.2% for the penalty kill, which has us tied for 8th place, way up than we were earlier in the season. So it's actually pretty crazy what impact Watson has on our PK, especially with a shot blocking wise. I think that man has blocked more shots than on our entire team since he's come back.
Yeah, I think Gallagher said the reason, his logic behind it, he said, look, it's just what it comes down to is that Austin Watson's just the best defensive forward on the roster, and that's why his impact is so felt on the PK unit.
Yeah, and what's crazy is he's come back and also had a hat trick too.
Yeah.
So he's doing it on both ends right now, which, once again, we needed to tread water till we got some of our other players back, because what an absolute incredible time for someone to get hot and be good solidly defensively for us.
Now, if only somebody could talk to the Preds about the power play. 27th in the league, 14.4%, or 16 out of 111.
Hey, we're up, baby. We're up, baby, from 31st. We're slowly creeping up.
Actually, let me let you in on this stat. I don't know if you guys seen this from Adam Vingan. He said that Josi has been putting more shots on goal on the power play unit at his career high rate, but he's converting at a career high low. Pretty interesting. His conversion rate on the power play is not very good, and that seems to be indicative of how the Preds power play unit has been going overall.
I think actually he got a power play goal tonight against Ottawa, so that's nice to see because he's been peppering the goal, like you said. Yeah. And he's been taking a lot of the shots. They just haven't been going in. So, honestly, I think for him, the key is to continue getting the shots in, continue generating the chances, and eventually they're going to fall.
It's like keep doing what you know to do, and it's going to fall eventually.
Well, look at Josi over here. Like I said, Ryan Johansson has got 21 assists. Josi is second with 18. So he's taking shots.
Actually, correct that. Josi has a power play goal, an assist, and a second goal tonight. So now he has 2 goals and an assist against Ottawa. So he's really stepping it up after not looking so good in the first period.
Now he takes up the 19 and puts him second in assist.
That's pretty impressive. Especially, I mean, it's not a surprise because our defense really drives the team in the points, but it is very good that he's been stepping up while key players have been out. I think that's the biggest theme for us over these last 10 games is we've had injuries, yes, we're 6-4, thanks to people stepping up. The depth that we talked about is there, but we're going to be very happy once everyone returns.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Preds have now started the season with a record 10-0 against Eastern Conference teams, which is actually the best starting record between conferences in NHL history.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. I didn't actually realize that till the other night once we had won and they tweeted it out. And it was a little shocking because you did, you know, like as I said, we were 6-4 in this last 10 games. So you would expect that some of our games we've been losing against Eastern Conference teams. I mean, we won against the Lightning, too, earlier in the season. So maybe it was just a matter of placement of the games, but, hey, we're 10-0 against Eastern Conference teams, and we're going to take it right now.
And we should also mention that our awesome GM, David Poile, is now a member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. He was inducted on December 13th.
Yeah, we actually have a poster over here that we'll put up in the studio eventually of him that we got at the game the other night. It's a pretty incredible accomplishment for him. And do note, this is the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, not the NHL Hall of Fame. There is a difference. So this is for basically people that further the game of U.S. hockey, too, and the expansion of it, which he has done quite a lot, Kyle. What's that list?
David Poile, general manager of the Preds. He is the only GM in Preds history.
Shocker. That's no shock to the Preds audience here.
He's the winningest GM in NHL history. He's the 2017 General Manager of the Year. He was on the U.S. Men's National Team Advisory Group. He was the 2014 U.S. Olympic Men's Ice Hockey GM. He was the Associate General Manager for the 2010 U.S. Olympic Men's Ice Hockey. He was the 98-99 U.S. Men's National Team General Manager, the 09-10 Men's National Team Associate GM. He won the 2001 Lester Patrick Award, and as of now, 2018 U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame inductee.
You know, David Poile has really done so much for the game of U.S. hockey, and also, I mean, obviously the Predators organization. This is his baby. But it is truly incredible what he's done for everything across the board, and truly fitting to be in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. And that's pretty smooth, Matt.
Really? You guys are going to use that?
Do you know how it is? It's actually real smooth.
Both of you, whatever.
But that gets us to our real smooth play of the week. And Kyle, what's your vote for it?
Well, if I've got to give a vote, I'm going to say it's Joey Silky Mitts on that shootout winner.
Let me tell you, it wasn't very flashy, but the amount of patience required for this goal was very impressive. Just a couple of little head motions, just a little, you know, left, right. It was so nice to watch in full speed, too, because you're just sitting there as a goalie, and you know it's about to happen, but you're trying not to react, and then he just bit one time. Boom. And Joey buried it, absolutely buried it, top shelf, too, on him. Had him falling forward, too. What a great goal.
Yeah, I feel like with Joey, it seems like everything is just whimsical and comical. It looked like he was just staring the goalie down.
I know. He wasn't even moving. That's why, like, I thought there was some, like, eye movement. There had to be something facial-wise to give him some indicator, because he did bite eventually at one point, and I'm like, he didn't even move. Yeah. It was a mind game going on out there. But he is, that's kind of goes with his character, you know, and his personality, but what a great goal. And that is definitely our real smooth play of the week. So be sure to jot that down this week. Kyle's shaking his head in shame. I literally piggybacked off David Poile as being real smooth for our real smooth player of the week.
And you'll need to jot that down, because on December 25th, we're going to be giving away a Preds Pecorine Pop Funko. And if you're selected, you will need to give us both real smooth players of our December episodes.
Yes, please do that, because Matt does not want to end up with this Pop Funko doll.
No, I do not.
Apparently, he does not like this art style.
You don't
which
like?
We found out after we bought it.
You don't like the black eyes just looking at you?
Yeah, it looks terrible. It's some kind of like Japanese anime nonsense.
The bobblehead, the actual ones, are like $100. So.
Give me a break.
Yeah, we couldn't afford those.
No. Not on this budget, Matt. Don't blow the budget for us,
yes,
Matt.
We're on a shoestring podcast budget here.
But, Matt, let's get into some of the injuries and milestones for this week in the league.
Yeah, we got a few injuries to mention. Carolina's going to be without Jordan Staal for a while. He's got a concussion. Arizona's Antti Raanta is likely going to be out for the rest of the year after having surgery on his lower body. And those acronyms get me every time. And Anaheim is going to be without Ryan Miller with an MCL sprain for about 6 weeks, and Ricard Raquel has an ankle sprain, and the dreaded Ottawa is going to be without Duchesne and Bobby Ryan, who are both on IR. A couple milestones to mention as well. Montreal's Claude Julien has now become the fifth fastest coach to 600 wins, and Vancouver's Pettersson is now the sixth rookie in the expansion era to have multiple five-point games in a year. And Patrick Laine is now sixth most in goals before he has reached 21 years of age. Colorado's Mikko Rantanen is now the ninth player to 40 assists in 32 games to begin a year. And Rantanen actually also leads the league in points, followed by teammate Nate McKinnon. And Ovi is now something else we didn't mention, another accolade of him, is the third player in history to have 25 or more goals in each of his first 14 seasons. And the last one I'll leave you with is that the World Junior Power Rankings have just came out for 2019. Mm-hmm. And number 10 on the Power Rankings is a country, Kazakhstan.
Who would have thought? I saw that the other day. Isn't that crazy?
That is pretty crazy. Who would have thought? Kazakhstan, baby.
In the desert,
10.
Baby. They're putting the ice rink out there. Also, a fun fact that I don't know if you saw. The Stanley Cup ban for the winners from 53 through 65 were actually retired today. So it is now going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So you're going to have some crazy good players. That is an elite list and group to have your name engraved on the cup with. They are now going to be displayed for everyone in the Hockey Hall of Fame now.
So what games do we have coming up, Daniel?
All right, so currently we are playing Ottawa. It is now going to overtime thanks to the miraculous 3-goal comeback of the Predators. So we will update you if this goes final here in the next couple minutes. Tomorrow, it's a back-to-back. We're going down to Chicago to play in Chicago. And as we mentioned before, 11 out of the next 14 are on the road. Brutal stretch. We then go to Philly on the 20th. We then go to Boston on the 22nd just to have a nice little Christmas break. And then after the Christmas break, we will return home for Dallas on the 27th and New York on the 29th. You will also have Washington, your team, your beloved Ovi. We're going to go play them on the 31st.
Happy New Year to me.
I know. We should do a road trip for that one. On the 1st, we're going to have Philly, and then we'll round it out with Detroit on the 4th. In Detroit, in the formidable Little Caesars Arena.
Bring your A game.
Bring the breadsticks.
And your pizza.
And finally, we will have Montreal and Toronto on the 5th and the 7th on the road. And by then, we should have another episode out.
Well, guys, this has been Music City Gold. From all of us here, we'd like to say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year. You guys have a great week. Take it away, Rachel.
You've been listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio, powered by the Ingram Agency. We'd love to interact with you on Twitter. The show can be found at Music City Gold. You can find Kyle at Kyle Hancock, Daniel at C. Dandrum, and Matt at MattBain31. Past episodes of the show can be found by subscribing to Penalty Box Radio on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at penaltyboxradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the ice.